Hello and welcome to Quilter Cheviot's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we've been exploring for you here at Quilter Cheviot. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Jack Bishop, investment manager based out of our Manchester office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by regular commentator and head of fixed interest research, Richard Carter, and Sheena Berry, our healthcare analyst. A very good morning to you both. Looking back at the week that's gone, a good week for markets overall. That began at the start of the week where an agreement between the US and China was reached to suspend the tariffs for 90 days. And that would bring US tariffs on most Chinese goods down from 145% to 30%, and China's on the US dropping from 125% to 40%. So the US market, as you'd expect, reacting quite positively to that, and then giving an extra boost with deals announced in Saudi Arabia during Trump's tour of the Middle East, where their new state-owned AI company, Humane, would be using hundred thousands of NVIDIA's most sophisticated chips over the next 5 years. We also had inflation data, both CPI and PPI reports out of the States. Again, that was quite taken positively, and we'll come back to those in just a minute. And then finally, in the UK, we had Q1 GDP data out, which surprised on the upside. So Richard, firstly, on those GDP figures, 0.7% in Q1, fastest pace in a year. Rachel Reeves, as you'd imagine, would have breathed a sigh of relief. But delving into the detail, probably not quite as good as the headlines would have you believe. Would you agree with that? And clearly, we're not factoring those tariff impacts, the increase in the national insurance contributions, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to be too negative on it because, you know, we've been complaining about really slow UK growth for ages, and then suddenly we get a good number and everyone just sort of dismisses it out of hand. So we should be pleased that, you know, Q1 looks to have gone pretty well. But yeah, I mean, clearly a lot of companies, I mean, particularly on the sort of industrial side, were ramping up production ahead of those tariffs. And also, you know, now the impact of the tariffs is going to come through. You've got, as you say, national insurance tax rises and all the rest of it. So the 0.7% pace is unlikely to be sustained, that's fair to say. But yeah, at least the year's got off to a reasonable start. I mean, Starmer's doing all these kind of side trade deals with, you know, he's done one with the US and India, and now obviously he's talking about doing, you know, some more deals with Europe. So he'll be hoping that longer term, that's good news for the UK economy, but clearly unlikely to see much benefit of that this year, I think.
Yeah, just kind of easing some of those frictions. So sticking to the data, we had over in the States, so the hard data seems to be holding up relatively well, despite fears of a impending recession as a result of the tariffs. So Richard, just give us an overview maybe of those CPI and PPI releases I referred to before. So what was the impact as well on bonds and kind of rate cut expectations? I note that the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecast for Q2 seems to have ticked up quite a bit.
Yeah, as you say, the data out in the US is holding up all right. Everyone's waiting for tariffs to push up the inflation numbers and kill growth, but certainly hasn't happened yet. Certainly things like, you know, jobless data is still pretty encouraging. So yeah, the inflation numbers, CPI was weaker than expected, 2.3%. You had things like car and clothing prices, which are classic sort of areas where you might see the impact of tariffs. You know, the price rises there were pretty muted, actually, and maybe importers for now are absorbing some of the extra costs of tariffs, but that's unlikely to last, I think, depending on what Trump does with the tariffs. And also consumer inflation expectations remain pretty high. So yeah, it's fine for now, but you know, clearly there's a risk that inflation does pick up. I mean, the bond market, it's gradually kind of moving its focus, I think, away a little bit from trade onto fiscal issues, which we might come on to. Yeah, the expectations for Fed rate cuts this year have really been quite dramatically scaled back. So there's only two cuts priced into the bond market now.
Yeah, quite right. Probably will come on to the fiscal side of things. So there seems to be much more news flow and focus now. So we moved on from tariffs and we're now looking at Donald Trump's one big, beautiful bill. So this is his kind of tax cuts revisited, if you like. So approved towards the end of last week by the House Ways and Means Committee. All amendments kind of put forward by Democrats were voted down. And then some estimates is kind of the cost of the bill. So the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget projects the bill could add up to $5.2 trillion to the national debt over 10 years. So we'll now continue through Congress. I think the Speaker is hoping to have full House approval ahead of Memorial Day weekend. So that's coming up next week. Seems quite ironic as well that in order to help fund this, Richard, Trump seems to be targeting huge cuts to Medicaid, which probably a lot of his supporters and voters are dependent on. So how do you see that panning out ahead of the midterms? We've seen yields kind of pick up this morning as well, particularly at the long end. The 30 years breached that 5% mark.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. I mean, the US deficit, you know, US borrowing is clearly unsustainable over the longer term. We've got, you know, as you say, we've got this big bill going through Congress, and the focus seems to be on, you know, back end loading some of the spending cuts and just sort of front end loading the tax cuts. And I think obviously Trump will be hoping that it'll be popular and the benefit cuts around Medicaid and all the rest of it won't kick in for some time, so it'll be fine for midterms. I mean, the thing that's changed this, I guess, today really has been Moody's stripping the US of their AAA rating. This is in some ways not unexpected. The other rating agencies did cut the US from AAA some time ago, so this is not, I don't think, going to lead to any sort of force selling a US Treasury by US Treasuries by, you know, money market funds and all the rest of it. However, it is a reminder that the US fiscal credibility is heading completely in the wrong direction, and Congress doesn't seem willing or able to really deal with it. There doesn't seem the political will to get it really under control and make sacrifices. You know, UK had its Liz Truss mini budget moment. Will we see the same in the US? You know, we hope not, but it's always possible. The thing that makes me reasonably optimistic about the whole situation is that Scott Bessent and Trump do seem to be very sensitive, as we saw the tariffs, with what happens with bond markets. So hopefully, if we do see a bit of a wobble in the market, then they will act responsibly. We shall have to wait and see.
Yes, the bond vigilantes bringing them back into line. Let's hope so. So thanks for your thoughts, Richard. Sheena, if we turn to you now, you're responsible for the healthcare research at QC. Unfortunately, it was your sector's turn to face the wrath of Trump recently. So we signed the executive order aimed at lowering drug prices, and that's kind of communicating a price target and threatened to punish other countries who refuse to equalize their prices with the US or that extort drug companies into lowering their charges. So what impact might that and could it have on your stocks under coverage, both share price terms and potentially hits to earnings? So we know it's often in the news. So you remember Biden passing legislation as part of the Inflation Reduction Act to reduce prices of insulin, etc.
Yeah, as you say, there's certainly been a reasonable amount of news in the healthcare sector over the last week or so. And, you know, we sort of really do need to try and find out some more details. But obviously, you know, President Trump made a social media post over the weekend of the 10th, 11th of May, saying that he would be signing an executive order that would reduce prices immediately by 30 to 80% and really trying to establish a most favoured nation price. Now, this did create a lot of concern, you know, and that was seen in the share prices of pharmaceutical stocks in the morning of Monday, the 12th of May. And that was before we heard some more detail. We did see a bit of recovery given the tone of the executive order was probably more benign than what many had feared, although details are still pretty vague. President Trump actually sounded more positive towards the industry than expected. And it does sound like he's keen to use sort of trade negotiations as a way to see Europe pay more for medications. So currently what we've got is you've got drug prices are higher in the US than other countries. And the intention really is to try and equalise this So we might see, you know, drug prices in the US coming down and potentially rising in other developed nations. But President Trump also made reference, you know, to direct-to-consumer negotiation, sort of removing the middleman in the US, and you know, that might actually help pharmaceutical companies. But the legal pathway of potential changes is, you know, is unclear. You know, we did see the courts block President Trump's last attempt at most favored nation proposal in 2020. And obviously, as you mentioned, we also still have the ongoing Inflation Reduction Act. So we do sort of need to hear some more details really around what might happen in relation to drug prices. But we also have the risk of tariffs remaining in the pharma sector. So historically, pharma has been exempt. And since the threat of pharma tariffs, you know, we have heard a number of companies looking to invest more in the US in terms of manufacturing and R&D. So companies at the moment, you know, they undertake a reasonable percentage of manufacturing in the US for the US. But, you know, after this threat of tariffs, you know, pharma companies really are talking about doing 100% of manufacturing in the US for the US. And obviously, when it comes to the US, it is an important market for large pharmaceutical companies, you know, given it typically represents around 40 to 60% of group sales. So we sort of do need to find out a bit more detail, you know, especially if there's going to be, you know, challenges in the legal pathway. But in the absence of details, you know, I do think there's probably going to be a little bit of overhang that's likely to remain in the sector. But that said, the sector is trading at a rare discount. So you could say, you know, some of that uncertainty is priced in. But, you know, sentiment in healthcare does feel a little more challenged at the moment. But we obviously await more details about what some of these changes might entail.
That's really helpful, Sheena. And I know two stocks under your coverage that get quite a lot of attention are Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, who together, as things stand anyway, the only real game in town when it comes to weight loss drugs. So Novo kind of suffered recently. Company announced the departure of its CEO at the end of last week. And the momentum really appears to be with Eli Lilly, particularly in share price terms. So could you just provide a bit of detail around maybe what's caused that divergence? Maybe it's, I don't know, trial drug data, production and demand and the price of the drugs maybe.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, sort of things have taken a bit of a turn with Novo Nordisk. So, you know, having taken the crown of I suppose, Europe's largest company from LVMH in September 2023, you know, the share price, you know, has been weaker over the last 12 months, and especially since the group announced data from a next generation obesity asset in December, which ultimately failed to meet sort of high expectations. It then did lose the crown of Europe's largest company to SAP in March this year. You know, and as you mentioned, you know, as a result of the recent share price performance and market challenges, we got the news of Novo's CEO stepping down on Friday, the 16th of May. But, you know, there is some short-term uncertainty around the growth drivers for Novo's obesity drug Wegovy in the US. Now, the supply issues have been addressed, but we are yet really to see a meaningful uptick in prescription trends. So compounding drugs can be partially blamed. So compounding drugs were allowed on the market when the drugs were in short supply, and they essentially now have until the end of the month to curtail activities. Novo has also undertaken a couple of deals recently, you know, such as a collaboration with Hims and Hers, and it's also got the CVS Caremark drug preference. But we sort of really need to wait and see how this might impact the price of the drugs and, you know, as a result, potentially the volume pickup of it. But when it comes to Eli Lilly, you know, has been winning share in the obesity market, and it has also made progress with its pipeline. So it announced positive phase 3 data in type 2 diabetes, and that was with its small molecule oral drug. So the drugs on the market at the moment are weekly injectables. So this is sort of some data from an oral drug, and that was in the first of sort of 7 obesity and diabetes phase 3 trials. And we should hear from Eli Lilly some obesity data with its oral drug in sort of July or August this year. So really, the positive momentum sort of has been more on Eli Lilly's side than Novo Nordisk's. And whilst, you know, the market does continue to be dominated by those two companies, you know, competition is coming. There's a number of ongoing clinical trials that are focused on, you know, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and any associated diseases. So, you know, it is an area I'm sure we will continue to hear about as developments progress.
Absolutely. And finally, maybe for our listeners, could you just tell us a bit more, some of your favourite companies under coverage, maybe over here and in the US, and maybe within the subsectors of the healthcare sector?
Yeah, of course. I mean, usually in times when there's uncertainty within the pharma subsector, you'll tend to find, you know, medical technology and sort of healthcare services companies tend to perform better in terms of share price performance. But there has actually been, you know, a bit of uncertainty across a lot of the healthcare sector, you know, as a result of tariffs, sort of research funding cuts, changes, you know, at the FDA, which is the US regulator, and obviously the drug pricing headlines. But really, that said, really continue to look at sort of the higher quality names, you know, with good growth outlooks and catalysts. And one that really fits that is AstraZeneca. You know, it's got a full pipeline and a catalyst-rich year ahead. And out of all pharmaceutical companies, it's probably got one of the ones with the most catalysts coming up. There has also been weakness in sort of the life science tool space. But, you know, continue to view Thermo Fisher Scientific positively, given its large and diversified portfolio. And then just finally, in the medical technology space, you know, there have been some concerns around sort of the hospital CapEx environment, but do continue to think, you know, Siemens Healthineers is well placed in its markets, such as in the imaging market. So, you know, whilst there is still some uncertainty, you know, in the sector overall, there are certainly some attractive opportunities out there.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Sheena, and to you, Richard, for your time, and to all of you for listening. So did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We love to hear from our listeners, so please review the show now wherever you're listening, or share it on your socials and tag us at Quilt Achieviot. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, you can head over to our website, www.quiltachieviot.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. And you can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. Finally, we do like to hear from our listeners. So if you've got a question you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via our weekly comments page on our website. And that's it for today. So thank you again to Richard and to Sheena, and to all of you for listening. See you next time.